Johanna, how do you approach this in your patients? Do you feel that it's, you know, it maybe is not necessary to use it up front? We can wait until relapse. What are the upsides or downsides of not even using adjuvant therapy?
Yeah, I mean, that's been the $1 trillion question. I mean, we saw the, you know, imatinib now or imatinib later. That's been over and over again. And then you look at your patient in front of you and you see the 3-year data and there seems to be some survival data. They've done studies where they've looked at intermittent imatinib dosing in patients in the metastatic setting and actually found that to be inferior to continuously giving imatinib, which makes one think that, you know, should you just go ahead and give it? I was thinking about a patient of mine who has high risk GIST, and I have sort of prescribed for her 3 years of adjuvant imatinib therapy, to which she's thrilled because she's having a bunch of facial swelling right now and more fatigue. But I think for those young patients with the high risk particularly, now the intermediate risk, I might be more inclined to say we can either wait or I wouldn't feel as bad if we had to stop. But for the patients with the high risk, I may just continue them on for the moment.
When you talk about high and low risk, how do you convert that into risk of relapse?
So what you're looking at is you're looking at the patients who have the higher number of mitotic figures on histology, and you're looking for the patients with the larger tumors. The other thing that I'm looking at in terms of risk, and more of this is risk of imatinib dosing, which we haven't talked about yet and actually was not presented in the EORTC data, is the whole issue of exon 11 versus exon 9 mutations. And that's something that I'm actually checking in my patients, because even though there hasn't been a prospectively defined trial, there's been enough data coming out of subset analyses from much larger randomized phase 3s that really suggest that if you have an exon 9 mutation, 400 milligrams of imatinib is not enough, and you have to give them 800. And so a lot of these studies, and because there is such a relatively high prevalence of exon 9 mutations, without seeing that data, to put that into some context too, was there an imbalance between the arms? It makes it harder for me to say I shouldn't give any adjuvant therapy.
But when you, again, talking about high risk, thinking about the discussion we had earlier about numeracy, for example, in adjuvant colorectal cancer, and breast, people are usually thinking about risk of relapse. So yes, you have the different factors, you plug it into a nomogram, but what risk of relapse in your mind is what you're calling high risk, and what risk of relapse is what you're calling low risk?
So to me, and I'm going to have to ask for some help here also from my colleagues, is to me a high risk of relapse in GIST is like 50%.
And you're going to tell me that the low risk is 25%, because those are always the numbers I hear. Is that right?
Studies vary as to the, you know, the adjuvant studies don't always, and that's a problem. So all these different studies have different criteria for high risk or low risk. The thing that we use the most, there's a very useful table that comes from a very large data set. And, you know, the other thing that also kicks in, so it's mitosis, pre-powered field size, and also location. And so, you know, if you have a small tumor in the stomach that has a very low mitotic rate, that's very different, for example, than someone who has a high-grade tumor in the rectum, for example, that's large. So what we do is that we have this printed out because we use it so much, and sometimes I'll use it to show the patient, this is, you know, you fit in here, these are the risks of what you have, and then we have a discussion about adjuvant.
This concludes our program. Special thanks to our faculty, and thank you for listening. This is Dr. Neil Love for this special Clinical Investigator Think Tank on GI Cancers.